We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome into a Monday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Basketball Pod. Nick Whalen, Alex Berutha here with you as we are every Monday. Alex, I want to get out ahead of the narrative. I am sick. That's why my eyes look terrible, why my voice sounds terrible. I don't want to hear about it in the comments. We will push through. Getting to the end now of the fantasy basketball season. Some leagues wrapping up. I know the RotoWire Stake League finishes up after this week. There's still some leagues out there that do go through game 82, but certainly entering a slower part, I suppose, of the fantasy season. But a lot going on in the real life NBA, including the Golden State Warriors suddenly losing their foothold on what could be the final play-in spot in the Western Conference.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty surprising. I mean, when Elper and Şengün got hurt, we just wrote off Houston. It's like, oh, yeah, they're done. You know, Şengün's not coming back, and then all of a sudden, Houston can't lose a game. And Jabari Smith at center is working out for them. I think it's opening up the floor a little bit more, and Jalen Green's able to operate with some space, and they're pushing up the standings. And Golden State's been, I would say like underwhelming to average recently during this stretch.
Yeah, I mean, Houston, for one, we kind of forget, they got off to a good start, right? I mean, this team was 6-3 early on. We were talking about them as, you know, maybe this surprise team out west. I mean, they were essentially 500 at the halfway mark, and then, you know, really hit a rough patch in February going into the All-Star break. They've had a somewhat easy schedule here. Like, their wins during this streak have come over Portland, Sacramento, San Antonio, Washington, Cleveland, Washington, Chicago, Utah. So that's definitely part of it. But they've won a lot of these games handily. I mean, they just housed the Utah Jazz at home on Saturday. They get another pretty appealing matchup tonight against a Portland Trailblazers team that started all rookies in one game over the weekend. That's where we're at with Portland. After that, they're at OKC on Wednesday. Another good matchup on Friday at Utah. They do have a slightly harder schedule the rest of the way than Golden State does, but it's not a complete minefield. You know, I think you take the Warriors' experience, you take their schedule, you take their players, obviously, over what we have in Houston here, but I don't think it's just decided that Golden State can necessarily flip a switch here. I do think the Warriors end up making it. This would be one of the stories of the season if the Warriors somehow find a way to back out of the play-in. But concurrent with all this is that, you know, the Lakers have been playing fairly well. You know, they now are as many games above 500 as they've been at any point this season. You know, they're looking like they're going to have a pretty good chance to maybe snag the 7 or the 8 in the West. I wouldn't count on it. I mean, they're 2.5 back of Sacramento and Dallas, but at the very least, you know, would have home court in what would be the 9-10 play-in matchup against Golden State or Houston. Yeah, what is going on with the Warriors side of this? I think it's kind of obvious with Houston, right? It's like soft schedule, court opening up, Jalen Green playing well. Maybe we didn't see this coming, but the Golden State side of it is very interesting to me. You know, Steph Curry was a little miffed, I think, as far as how many minutes he played last night in their loss. You know, obviously they made the move earlier in the season with Klay Thompson coming off the bench. Kuminga continues to play pretty well. You know, they're getting good minutes out of Trayce Jackson-Davis. Chris Paul's back in the mix. Like, it's hard for me to find a reason, you know, why Golden State would be seemingly, I wouldn't say full on collapsing, but playing some of its shakiest basketball of the season right now.
Yeah, it's hard to say because, you know, they had a hot stretch earlier coming out of the All-Star break. And I just think, you know, sometimes it happens where a team is they're really up back against a wall. They get their guy back and Draymond. They're firing on all cylinders. But then I think it's a lot. They've kind of regressed. Like Wiggins is shooting a little bit better, but he's still only giving you like 12 points a game.
Yeah.
You know, he's not really doing much for you. Klay, you know, Klay's shooting better from three and everything, but again, like that's all he's doing for you. Chris Paul has his games, but honestly, at this point, it's like he's just out there to pass and commit like no turnovers. Like he's just holding down the fort. So, you know, it's, I think what they experienced before was just an unreasonable hot stretch. And now they've sort of regressed to the mean a little bit with their play.
So we always check in on the play-in odds at the DraftKings Sportsbook. I mean, everybody, you know, loves that, you know, loves hearing about that. Warriors are -2,500 to participate in the play-in. And Houston is 6-1, which is interesting to me. So the books aren't really backing off. The Lakers are -50,000. I mean, they're essentially locked in at this point. Atlanta's -10,000. To make the play-in in the East. So we kind of know, you know, in general what group of teams we're looking at here. But surprising a little bit that Golden State is still holding firm at such a strong number at 2,500, because, you know, undoubtedly the Rockets have looked like the better team over these last couple of weeks. I will ask you what, unfortunately, I feel like is an impossible question. Do we buy in on what we've seen from Jalen Green since Şengün went down? He's had these stretches before, you know, including, I think it was at the end of his rookie year, you know, had a pretty shaky, like, first 70 games. And then, you know, at the end, we're like, oh, okay, here we go. This is maybe more what we expected. Is this just kind of a volume equation, you know, beating up on some bad defenses? Has your opinion on Jalen Green been shaped at all over the last few weeks?
I mean, it's partially a volume equation because he is taking 21 shots a game over the past 12, but he's shooting, you know, basically 50, 40, 80. He's still really not doing anything from an assist perspective, but I think I don't want to say he doesn't necessarily mesh with Şengün, but there are Green's athleticism is so high that if you just give him all the floor space in the world with, you know, Jabari Smith spacing at the five and Amen Thompson, you know, just kind of doing out utility stuff, setting screens, rolling, hanging out by the basket, running really hard in transition. You know, they're going to be a better transition team like this too. It does allow Green some more room to operate and get some better looks, I guess, for his shot diet.
Yeah, I still think there Jalen Green has a lot to prove as far as not being a good stats, bad team guy, but you'll take it, right? I mean, it's certainly not a negative to see somebody putting up like 35 a game over his last four. Like we've kind of known that he's capable of this, and you still want to see it, even if it's coming against Portland and Washington and San Antonio. And you know, obviously, it would be a hell of a story if he's able to keep this up over a tougher schedule the rest of the way. We don't have a ton in terms of news this week, which is mostly a good thing because news tends to be injury news. You know, the big one would be Brandon Ingram. You know, that was late last week. We found out he's going to miss some time, at least another week and a half, dealing with a bone bruise in his left knee. You know, wouldn't be surprised if that lingers a bit longer. You know, that's when they'll reevaluate him, was that 2-week timetable, not when he'll necessarily be back. Pelicans have been just fine without him so far. They've taken down Miami and Detroit, both of those wins coming by double digit. Pel's 11-5 with a +9.4 net rating since the All-Star break, third best net rating behind only Boston and Denver. Talked about this a little bit on the RotoWire NBA show. Hopefully you listened last week. But you know, how seriously do we have to take the Pels at this point? Because they're only a half game back of the LA Clippers for the four seed. And the Clippers now have basically been a 500 outfit since the All-Star break.
Yeah. To me, this is also more, it's almost more like the Clippers are becoming concerning while the Pelicans are like on a hot streak and they're sort of colliding, like you mentioned. I mean, I've always been of the belief that we should take the Pelicans seriously as long as they're healthy. Now you mentioned Ingram is going to be out for a while, so we'll see kind of what happens. But, you know, the thing that makes the Pelicans, I think, intimidating as a potential playoff opponent is not only like the explosive scoring ability of Zion Williamson and everything Brandon Ingram can do as like an all-star caliber player, McCollum being a veteran point guard and all that, but they have so many different looks they can go to. You know, I think they're getting this far in terms of being a great offense and defense by having a ton of different lineups that they can throw out there. They can go Larry Nance at center. They could go Zion at center. They can play Herb Jones and Trey Murphy at the same time. If they need a quick scoring punch against a small team, they can go Jordan Hawkins. If there's a point guard giving them trouble, you throw Alvarado in there. And being able to sort of form to the matchup at hand while keeping most of your best players on the court the whole time it's really powerful.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Yeah, I mean, we said it at the beginning of the year, right? They have as much depth, if not more, than any team in the league. And I think for fantasy, it was almost a bad thing at times because when they are fully healthy, you know, you're playing the, well, do I start Trey Murphy? Do I start Herb Jones? Like, there are only so many sure things in that rotation. But this is one of the few teams in the NBA that can sustain, you know, the loss of someone like Brandon Ingram for a couple of weeks. I will say we're going to find out if this team is for real in the next week and a half because their next five games come against OKC tomorrow, Milwaukee Thursday, Boston Saturday, next Monday Phoenix, next Wednesday Orlando. That is about as tough of a five-game stretch as it gets, although they do get all five of those at home.
That is nice. Yeah, that's going to be tough without Ingram. I think that's maybe where we start to see the sort of drain of Ingram not being there. But again, you know, they're just going to give more minutes to the guys they already are comfortable playing. Mm-hmm. And I think you just run more points Zion and it can work out.
All right, we've got a couple questions in the chat here. Feel free to throw those in there, guys. I know, you know, fantasy playoffs ongoing. Some leagues have wrapped up, but we'll dish out as much advice as we can. Johnny says, what's up, fellas? What's up, man? Holmes or Bagley or roster both. He's in the semifinals of a 9-cat league. First of all, the schedule this week, it's like 60-40, four games versus three games. We don't have any 5-game weeks. We don't have any 2-game weeks, thankfully. The Wizards are on a 4-game week. They play at Chicago, Brooklyn, Detroit, and then Miami. So pretty decent schedule for this week. With that in mind, you know, I don't necessarily hate rostering both of those guys. I mean, it depends how big your league is, who else is available, as we always say. Are you starting both of them? Are you kind of playing the matchup night to night? I assume you're just going to blindly say Marvin Bagley, Alex.
Well, you forget how much I love Rashawn Holmes also.
Yeah.
I can't believe Holmes is already 30. I think you can roster both because I am not 100% sure what Washington plans on doing now that Bagley's healthy. You know, Bagley came back for their most recent game, played 16 minutes off the bench. Holmes' minutes didn't move at all. He started, played 28, and worked for 15 and 14 with two blocks. So it's like, okay, are they going to bring Marvin Bagley off the bench now? Or are they going to Could they just start Marvin Bagley and then Rashawn Holmes is getting like DMPs or like 12 minutes a game again? Yes, that's possible. I would prefer if you can to hold both and just see what Washington does.
Yeah, I think if you have to hold one or the other, it probably has to be Holmes right now, just because Bagley missed so much time. He's only played one game. You know, maybe those minutes do rise. And likely they would, I would imagine. But I think if you're choosing between one or the other, I would go Holmes. You know, in terms of other potential pickups in your average league, it's like it's maybe Paul Reed sitting out there, you know, Taylor Hendricks, perhaps. You know, both of those guys are on 4-game weeks this week. But again, without knowing the league size, you know, it's kind of hard to say if you could do better. But, you know, we also, the other thing with Washington is like either of those guys are liable to miss any games the rest of the way, right? Like you might want to have one or the other, because it's totally possible that both are not available for all 4 games this week.
Yeah. I mean, it wasn't as bad as it was like a week or a week and a half ago, but you look at the sort of recent game logs of Washington and it's like over the past 5 games, Kuzma's missed 2, Avdija's missed 3. I was going to say this like it mattered, but it kind of does. Anthony Gill missed a game because he was playing 20 minutes a game. Goodness. I know. Like Johnny Davis is out there getting run and stuff. So it's like, it's hard. Tyus Jones remains out. So Washington is going to be, I think, as tough to predict the rotation of going forward as any team really in the bottom 6 or 7.
Is Johnny Davis going to be in the NBA next year, by the way? I mean, this is rough. The opportunities have been there. He's back to the bench now. He made that one glorious start against Houston last week. I mean, he's probably the worst lottery pick of the last 5 to 10 years without doing deep research here.
I think, well, look, I mean, they got the team option for another 2 years, basically $5 million and then $6 million. I think if you're Washington, look, I think from an optics perspective, you should probably just hang on to him, because it's like, what are you going to do with that $5 million or $6 million anyway? And if your team is going to continue to be bad, it's like, you may as well just see if you can like Killian Hayes it. And like, can we force this guy to get 15 minutes a game no matter what, and just make him, you know, make it work. And whether or not we give him a second contract is another story.
Yeah, things are bleak right now. Johnny follows up and asked, is Chimezie Metu a solid stream? Well, unfortunately, that's a very fair question, because, I mean, Detroit, they're like 17-point dogs tonight. And, you know, there are a lot of reasons for that. One of them is they're down Durin, they're down Cade, they're down Fontecchio, they're down Isaiah Stewart for the rest of the season, they're down Taj Gibson. So they're basically running out of depth up front, which means that we'll likely see a lot of Metu, as we did in their last game, played 38 minutes. Probably see a lot of James Wiseman as well. My first thing would be that Detroit's on a 3-game week. So it kind of depends. If you're in a daily lineup league, yeah, I don't mind throwing him out there. Could you do better with somebody, you know, if it's weekly, probably want the 4 games.
Yeah, probably. I mean, look, I don't mind Metu. I think that he was a solid backup, and maybe even sometimes an underutilized backup in Sacramento for a few years, just very capable of giving you like that, you know, basically 15 and 10 with a block or a steal, sort of classic big man. Can also give you a 3 here and there. So like, is he a solid stream? Yeah, I guess.
I thought you were going to say no.
No.
Not really. Well, he's played more than 20 minutes 7 times this season between Phoenix and Detroit. And in those games, he's averaging 13.5 points, 7 boards, 1 assist, 1.5 steals, 1.5 threes. So I think that's reasonable baseline. And, you know, if it really comes down to Durin, right? Like if Durin misses the entire week, then I think he becomes really viable.
Yeah, you're hoping Durin remains out. And again, with a team like this, there's no reason to rush Durin back.
All right. Don Sicario says he's debating dropping Anfernee Simons and picking up a Pelican for the week. Interesting concept here. I mean, Portland, for one, is on a 3-game week. And Anfernee Simons is already ruled out for the first of those, which is tonight against Houston. So you're looking at a 2-game week for Simons. He got injured against the Clippers, a couple nights ago. Prior to that, you know, they were blown out by the Clippers, played only 28 minutes. Before that, I mean, he'd still been playing a full workload, like 38 to 42 minutes most nights. But in what now amounts to a 2-game week at best, I don't really have a problem with it. You know, as far as like, do you have to pick up a Pelican specifically? they're on a three-game week. So, if, like, you know, if somebody good is out there, yeah, of course, if you're in a shallow league, I don't mind it. But again, if you're looking to, you know, basically stream for a week in the fantasy playoffs, I'm still prioritizing games played. So I wouldn't go too deep on the Pelicans specifically, especially like we said, I mean, with these tough matchups coming up.
Yeah, I think it's tough with Simons. It's listed as tendonitis. That's like a rest injury. Like, you have to rest it to recover it. And of course,
yeah,
we know how Portland is. I mean, Nick mentioned they started all rookies the other night. Picking up a Pelican. Yeah. I mean, if you want to pick up a Pelican in the wake of the Ingram news, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I don't know 100% who's available in your league, but Larry Nance, Najee Marshall, are guys who could be available depending on your league size. That's a little too much risk, because Simons could come back and average like 25 and 5, mm-hmm. In the games that he plays. But I understand if you're in a must win, like you have to win this matchup situation, I understand the move.
All right. Torrey Thompson says, I have a bye this week. Is it worth it to pick up Trae Young or Tyler Hero in case we get positive news in the coming days? Don't really need them, but I'm greedy. LOL. Head to head category league. This is not greedy. I think this is gamesmanship here. I think the question is, which of these guys do we feel, you know, more strongly about? To me, it would be Trae Young. I mean, we haven't really gotten much of a positive update on either of them. You know, Hero, I don't know what's going on with Hero, man. I mean, he hasn't played since February 23rd. We haven't received an update on him in almost 10 days now. He had a PRP injection in his foot. My guess is Miami is, you know, they're in playoff mode with Hero, right? They just need him back for when it matters. Atlanta's banged up all over the place right now. You know, the Trae Young thing is strange, because given his profile as a player, you'd think we'd have something over the last couple of weeks. This could just be one of those classic, like, Shams, you know, tweets at 5:30 p.m. Trae Young is now questionable for tonight. You know, he could be back at some point in the next couple of weeks. I would say if you have the roster space, sure, right? If you're on a bye this week, if you don't have to drop somebody of consequence, I think Trae Young would be the guy for me. They announced on February 25th that he would undergo surgery, and they gave him, you know, kind of a 4-week evaluation timeline, which would be hitting like now.
Yeah, the Hero thing is, I mean, Miami's kind of dodgy with their injury reporting anyway. It's a foot injury, which is very tough to come back from. You know, last year they kind of proved they didn't need him that much. Yeah. I'm still like a Tyler Hero, like, optimist. I don't think it's a situation where it's like they're better without Hero, or they should trade him because he's useless. I'm not that kind of a guy. But Trae Young, I mean, yeah, I wish we had more updates on him, but it's a left hand injury. If they really wanted him to come back, I think it could be sooner. I want to say it could be sooner than Hero, but it'd be easier to sort of force Trae Young to come back for the playoffs than Hero. Yeah. If that makes sense. And Atlanta is basically locked.
They're not forced to come back, but it's easier to play through discomfort with your offhand than it is your
foot. Right.
Yeah.
100%. And it, you know, it's hard to say, like, oh, one of them, there's incentive for one of them to stick out longer than the other one. I don't know. I mean, maybe Miami really wants to get into the sixth seed to avoid the play-in. Sure. But Atlanta is just locked into the 10 seed. I mean, they're not going to slip below Brooklyn. So there's that too.
Yeah, I'll say, if you have the roster space, just go grab Trae Young. You know, if you're not dropping somebody who you're planning on using next week, I don't really see why not. Michael says, I'm facing Zion and Trey Murphy this week. Any strategies to counter, or am I just totally screwed? LOL. I'm nervous as hell. So I assume this is, you know, like a head-to-head, you know, points or probably categories league if you're talking about countering. Trey Murphy's coming off of one of the all-time weirdest lines ever yesterday. 8 points, 8 boards, 4 blocks. 0 of 9 from 3, 1 of 12 from the field, and yet still gave you a decent line. In terms of countering, I mean, obviously with Trae Murphy, you're most worried about the volume threes, right? He's been rebounding really well. You know, the defensive stats are there every now and then, but it's really, you know, your fear is that he has like 3 games in a row this week where he hits 4 or 5 threes, and all of a sudden you're trailing in that category. So I think for Murphy, the strategy is either, you know, make sure you're starting or you're picking up somebody who you think can, you know, give you threes to try to counter that, or just say, all right, you know, and maybe this person you're playing has other, you know, 3-point studs on the roster, and say, all right, we'll chalk up that category as a loss and target something else. I mean, with Zion, obviously the production is more well-rounded, especially with no Ingram. I think we're going to see the passing tick back up as we did the other night against Detroit, 6 assists. I mean, the steals, the blocks have started to come around for Zion. That was kind of one of the big criticisms over the last couple of years, even when he was healthy, was, okay, we're seeing the scoring. The field goal percentage is great. He looks dominant, but he's not really the defensive player that he was at Duke. Like, that's starting to come back. The rebounding has been great since the All-Star break. So I don't really know that there's a way to counter Zion. I guess the one, you know, big pitfall for him, and even this has been better lately, is the free throw shooting, right? I mean, he's been in like the mid-70s over the last month, which for Zion is pretty good. But, you know, I think that's maybe one area you could try to exploit is, you know, you're hoping that Zion has a couple of those games where he's 7 of 12 at the line, and maybe you could sneak out a victory in that category.
Right. I mean, countering is tough because it's like, do you just avoid the categories that the other guys are good in to try to get, you know, get wins elsewhere? You know, right. It's like, because if you're talking about these three guys or these two guys, it's like Trey Murphy's going to be good in three, Zion's going to be good in points and field goal percentage, or like, those are their best categories. It's like, should you just avoid those entirely and just say, hey, that's a loss. I'll go for rebounds. I'll go for assists. I'll go for steals and blocks. It's tough to give you like a strong counter without knowing your team,
yeah,
like your full team construction.
Well, and the Pels are on a 3-game week, right? So like, I wouldn't base your whole week around this. You know, it's like, I think, you know, one example would be, you know, especially early in the season when he was rolling, like if you're going up against Tyrese Halliburton and he has 4 games, might be tough for you to win assists because he was giving you like 13 assists per game for a while there. But you know, 3 games of Zion, who's, you know, still not the greatest fantasy player, not as well-rounded historically as you would like. Trey Murphy, as he proved yesterday, is still capable of going 0-for-9 and then, you know, going 5-for-10 the next game. I wouldn't necessarily panic about this. Obviously, if you're in a position that you're still playing, you know, your team is pretty good here, and really the rest of your opponent's roster, you know, matters too. I wouldn't just worry about those two guys. All right, back to Johnny. He says, Keon Ellis or Bruno Fernando, would those guys be a better pickup than Chimezie Metu? I would rather have Metu than Fernando, I think. I know that the Hawks are without Okongwu for at least 1 game, and Jalen Johnson certainly could be more. We'll see. That's kind of the big unknown right now, but I do kind of like Keon Ellis, man. I mean, he's been in the rotation for a while. He basically usurped Davion Mitchell's spot, you know, a while back. And with Kevin Huerter sidelined now, you know, coming off of a big game against Orlando, 19 points, 6 assists, 5 boards, 4 threes. I would like to buy into that. At the same time, there's been a lot of other nights where he's played bigger minutes and has not produced like that. So it could be a little bit of fool's gold, but I don't mind Keon Ellis on a 4-game week.
I think, well, yeah, some of it, it's like, if you want the guy long-term, I mean, I don't think necessarily Ellis or Fernando are better for this week. But I think what Keon Ellis is doing is more sustainable long-term. So if you're looking to pick up a guy for this week who could also extend through the end of the season, I would go with Ellis. I mean, Kevin Huerter is done for the year. And Ellis was already stealing his minutes too. I mean, you mentioned Davion Mitchell's minutes, but Huerter was really bad towards the end of the season. And Ellis, look, he's not going to do that much for you besides steals and blocks. Like, you watch him play, he's just out there for defense. Very, very similar to Davion Mitchell. They just kind of like him more than Davion Mitchell. So, you know, over the past, what is this, 7 games, he's given you 2.3 steals, 1.3 blocks. I mean, that's like, he's sort of like a Matisse Thybulle, even though they're not really the same player.
Good note by you on Huerter, by the way, that we did get official confirmation that he is out for the season. Obviously we knew about the injury about a week ago, but King said, even for the playoffs, he's not coming back this year. So pretty big blow for Sacramento. Rahul Gupta says, I have LeVert, Hartenstein, Naz Reid, and Bogdanovich. Would Brook Lopez and or Paul Reed be better than any of those guys? You know, right away you're thinking, oh, Brook Lopez. Yeah, he's got to be better. You know, he was so great earlier in the season. Basically, as soon as I traded for him, Alex, in the stake league, the production has fallen off a cliff. I mean, he's basically been a 1 block per game guy over the last month. You know, the scoring still there here and there every now and then. You know, it kind of depends. Is he draining the 29-foot pull-up threes or not? It's kind of what it comes down to. We know who he is as a rebounder and a passer. It's going to be spotty. So I would like to say Lopez right away, but I don't really think that's the case right now.
Yeah, I think I'd be most okay with letting Bogdanovich go. I think he has the lowest upside of that initial group that you mentioned. So, look, I think if you need big man stats, I wouldn't mind dropping Bogdanović for Lopez or Reed. Reed's going to get you more traditional big man stats than Lopez because Reed will rebound and he'll block more shots and stuff like that. But Lopez doesn't rebound that much, hits threes, etc.
Yeah.
So it depends what you need. Depends what you need.
Yeah, Lopez on a three-game week. Don't really want it. Naz Reid has a three-game week this week as well. Paul Reed's on a four-gamer. So I would stay away from Lopez. Hartenstein's been really good of late. Knicks are on a four-gamer. I wouldn't worry about that. I think in a roundabout way, like OG being out kind of helps him a little bit. And, you know, Knicks still fighting for playoff position, so I don't necessarily think they really slow down here. I want to back up to a Şengün question that we had earlier. This one is, any chance Şengün comes back? I saw a rumor yesterday. He's on waivers in my league. I'd be pretty surprised. The last update non-rumor update that we had is that he's likely out for the regular season. But obviously the way the Rockets are playing, it's like, I don't know, if you're Şengün and you have any chance to return, I think it's certainly possible, but I wouldn't really count on it. To me, this is more of like a real life consideration than fantasy. It's like, even if he does return, by the time that happens, like unless your league goes through game 82 and you have a spot, you know, kind of like we said with Trae Young, if you can hold him and you're not giving up anything, I don't really see any downside. But if you need that spot, especially for the week ahead, like he's definitely not coming back in the next week.
Yeah, I'd kind of track down the rumor. Something Tim McMahon said. I don't know where he got it from, but that it's possible that if it really comes down to it, that Şengün could come back for the very end of the regular season, which was sort of the reporting. And the reporting initially was likely out for the regular season. I think that was also, I don't think Houston anticipated winning 8 straight without Şengün. So they were like, it's fine.
Yeah.
I would say it's not worth picking him up if your league ends before the last week of the season. If your league goes all the way through 82, I don't hate the idea of picking him up maybe for the last week, but I don't know if that's really going to pay off either way. It's kind of a long shot move.
Yeah. I mean, the way that McMahon phrased it, I think you put it pretty well. It was like, they essentially said he's probably out because they thought their season was over. And now it's like, well, maybe. The exact verbiage was, quote, in the realm of possibility. It's not like he's ramping up or anything. Like he's still recovering from what was not as severe of an injury as we thought, but ultimately a pretty severe ankle sprain. So, yeah, I would say, I mean, if anything, obviously you don't want news to come out that he's like on track to return and then maybe you missed your window. But I would, assuming you're in a fantasy playoff situation, you need to win this week, you need to win next week, you probably want that roster spot, maybe grab him a week from now if that possibility is still out there. Daniel says, Scoot is recently putting up nice numbers with a manageable field goal percentage the last couple of games. How boosted is he with Simon sideline? Is he a must own in a 10-team 9-cat league?
Well, 6 straight games of double-digit scoring for Scoot, which is actually notable. Yeah, 40% from the field, 38% from three, 5.7 assists to 3.5 turnovers, 1.7 steals for 17 points. That's good stuff. It's good stuff from Scoot. I mean, that's if that's what he was averaging all year, we'd be like, okay, nice rookie season, solid. Is he a must roster in a 10-team 9-cat? I think it would be good. It probably makes sense for someone to pick him up because, look, it's a 9-cat league, but I'm going to assume that at least half the teams, if not 80% of the teams, are just punting turnovers, and probably a decent amount of other teams are punting field goal percentage. You might be doing that. If you're punting one of those two, absolutely pick him up. If you're focusing on one of those two, do not pick him up. And if whether or not you win turnovers or field goal percentage is kind of like a wash to you, it's just whatever, then you could stream him in. Sure, why not?
So to answer one of the questions here, I wouldn't say he's a must own in a 10-team league just because there are enough guys out there. And he's like the 9-cat thing is what matters to me because the turnovers are a killer. He could average like 5 turnovers in a week, and that's going to be tough to come back from. They do only have a 3-game week this week as well. So that's something to consider. But yeah, I think you brought up a good point. I mean, if these were season long numbers, we'd be feeling a lot better. And you watch some of these games, like he's still making a lot of mistakes. I'm still a little reserved as far as, you know, is this going to go like we thought it might on draft night? You know, it's been a pretty rough rookie season for him overall, but he's going to have a nice 3-week runway here, I think, to put up some numbers for what's left of the Blazers. And who knows what happens with the Simons thing. I mean, anybody who's not a rookie is basically liable to be shut down at this point for Portland. Another Brook Lopez question. Would Lopez be considered a drop for someone like Trayce Jackson-Davis, Chimezie Metu, Luke Kornet, or Keon Ellis?
I would not drop Lopez for Kornet, and I would probably hesitate to drop him for Metu. But I'm not really going to scoff at you for wanting to drop Brook Lopez for Trayce Jackson-Davis, who has been really consistent. And over the past 10 games has averaged 11 points, 8 rebounds, 2 blocks. No, he's not getting you the threes, but that's not what you're asking about. You're asking about the rebounds. You are asking about the rebounds. Lopez versus Keon Ellis. Keon can grab some boards here or there.
Keon Ellis ranks higher in the last month somehow.
Well, yeah, he did have a 5-block game against Memphis, although Steph Curry got a block against Memphis. So how can we, you know, let's grade our curve here. We talked about Ellis before. I don't want to go back. But what I'll say is you should not be afraid to drop Lopez for Trayce Jackson-Davis specifically.
All right, Reds 22. I don't know if this is Clay Link or Jeff Erickson or who. He says, is Cade a drop in a Yahoo points league? He's in the finals. First and foremost, if it's just this week, if your finals are just this week, I think that comes into consideration. 3-game week for Detroit. He's already ruled out tonight. So best case scenario is he plays 2 games. One of those is a nightmare matchup against Minnesota. The other is the best possible matchup against Washington. So, you know, in Washington, they play later in the week. So there's a better chance that he plays in that one. That's on Friday. The Minnesota game is on Wednesday. But you're looking, again, at a best-case scenario of a 2-game week for Cade Cunningham. That is very scary. I would, you know, obviously it always depends on who's available, but I think you have to consider it. If you're looking at your opponent and you think they have a better team, they have better matchups, they have more projected games than me, these are the kind of really tough decisions you have to make this time of year.
Yeah, some people have 2-week playoff matchups. I have a buddy that's in a league like that. If it's a 2-week playoff matchup, I'm not dropping him. If it's just this week, I would try to find, you know, look at what stats you need, however your team is built, and try to find somebody on a 4-game week who matches your needs. And assuming that player is pretty decent, I think there's a pretty good chance that they outproduce what Cade does this week on a total stats basis based on what you need.
Yeah, it's just, it's really hard for us to speculate on, like, injuries like this at the end of the year. I have absolutely no idea, you know, if he's going to miss more time. Like, there's no, like, Detroit's got the worst record in the NBA right now. They are a lock to finish in the bottom four record wise. So there's no motivation for them to be worse than they have to be. But it's also one of those things where it's like, all right, if his knee is really bothering him, there's also no point for him to play. If we think it's something that could, you know, cause further damage, we want him to be as healthy as possible when we're presumably a better team next year. You know, the fact that they're being cautious with Fontecchio, cautious with Durin, that, you know, makes you wonder if they would go the same route with Cade. So I don't want to be the guy that's like, yes, drop him. And then he comes back and gives you 2 great games. But when I drop him for a pretty good player on a 4-game team, yeah, I think the risk reward checks out there.
Yep.
All right. We got a Kyle Kuzma question from Roger 888 Roger. He says, do I drop Kyle Kuzma? Kuzma has already been ruled out for tonight's game. He's kind of been in and out the last couple of weeks. It's a 4-game week for Washington. So he won't play tonight against Chicago. They play Brooklyn Wednesday, Detroit Friday, and Miami on Sunday. So still 3 more opportunities for Kuzma to get out there, dealing with a sore shoulder. So this doesn't appear to be anything of grave concern here. With the possibility of 3 games for Kuzma, this one is less of a sure thing for me than Cade.
I mean, it's a bit concerning that he's missing time now after he missed 2 games earlier in the week, then played 2, and now he's out again. That's a concern. Sort of blindly speaking on, like, the advice, I would be scared to drop Kuzma. The injury doesn't seem that serious. I wish they would be more forthcoming about it, obviously, but he's averaging 41 fantasy points a game in March. He's really good. I would be worried that I would drop him, and and he would come back. So I would prefer to hang on to Kuzma, not knowing exactly what the situation is.
I never thought we would hear that on the pod. Kyle Kuzma, he's really good. He has been good. He's been great in fantasy this year.
I've become like a Kyle Kuzma, like I think whenever I watch him play now, I think I'm like, this guy's good. Like, this guy's almost, yeah. He shouldn't be on the Wizards. He should be on some good team playing like 24 minutes a game, you know, giving them like some jolt off the bench. Although that's how I feel about almost everybody on Washington's roster. But, you know, Kuzma, yes, he is like a good stats, bad team guy, but I don't think he's like someone who can't scale up and do a better role. We saw it with the Lakers.
All right. Do I drop Brandon Miller? This is our next question. Hasn't been playing well. I also have Trey Mann and Nick Richards on the same team. So this is a 4-game week for the Charlotte Hornets. So I would proceed with some level of caution here. Yeah. I mean, Miller's been a little spotty of late. You know, he played really well coming out of the All-Star break and had a nice run at the beginning of March. Last 5 games, shooting about 35% from the field, 32% from three, just kind of the ups and downs, I would say, of most rookies. But I mean, the minutes have been there. They don't appear to be shutting him down. So this kind of comes back to our age-old question of, you know, how many teams are in your league? If it's a 10-teamer, then yeah, you could probably do better. But if it's a 12 or a 14 or a 16-teamer, then you're probably not doing a whole lot better than Brandon Miller on a 4-game week.
Yeah, I would not be dropping guys like this on a 4-game week. Just see what happens this week. If they still are playing terrible and it's a 3-game week or whatever it is next week, then you can entertain it. But, you know, if these guys were on the wire and they were on a 4-game week, we would be telling you to pick them up, you know? So I would not drop Miller on a 4-gamer.
Yeah. I mean, he's been like a borderline top 150 guy since the All-Star break, which is not ideal, but you know, if you're in a points league, you're not as concerned about that. It's really the field goal percentage and really the free throw percentage that's been dragging him down. I mean, he's been under 70% at the line over the last month or so. 10-team league for Johnny. So yeah, again, depends on who's on the waiver wire. If there's a better 4-game player, if there's somebody who can take advantage of injuries, yeah, maybe you think about it. But, you know, not a crazy question by any means. All right, Daniel says, would you drop Keontae George, Gary Trent, Malik Monk to add any of Najee Marshall, Jose Alvarado, or Malik Monk? So for one, I don't know if I'd drop Malik Monk. You know, I think with the Herter injury, there's a lot of upside for Malik Monk the rest of the way. You know, obviously he's coming off of a 0-11 game against Orlando. He's been pretty awful shooting the ball lately, but we know Malik Monk. We know that'll probably come back around. That's what you sign up for when you draft a kind of a streaky player like him. So with no Herter, I still want Malik Monk. Gary Trent, Keontae George, Najee Marshall, Jose Alvarado. That's, you know, a little bit tougher.
I'm not dropping any of those guys to add Marshall or Alvarado. Yeah. Those guys are just low usage players. They can have their games. Like Alvarado can get 4 steals in a game. Najee Marshall could have a double-double. It can happen. But low usage players, and those Keontae George and Gary Trent they're balling right now. Like, they're great. They're winning fantasy leagues for people. And so is Malik Monk to an extent, if you picked him up, especially while he was having a cold streak. So,
Yeah, Gary Trent's averaging 25 a game over the last 6. I mean, he is loving what's going on in Toronto here. He's basically the number one option for that team on a lot of nights. So I would not be getting rid of him. All right, a couple more, then we'll head out here. I'll put myself out of my misery. Is Julius Randle a drop? He's in the playoffs. He has Anfernee Simons and Jalen Johnson on IL already. Yeah, this is another tough call, right? You know, somebody who haven't really had a ton of updates on. The Knicks did tell us earlier today that he's yet to take contact, still working on getting strength back in that shoulder. I mean, again, it kind of depends how deep into your playoffs you are, but I think we see Julius Randle back before the end of the regular season. It's like, what version of him do we see? There's probably a ramp up period. I think if it's do or die, and you got to win this round of the playoffs, and you already have 2 guys on IL, I would be comfortable dropping him. I guess maybe the better question is, would you drop Simons before him? I would say probably not, just because we have no evidence that that's a longer term injury.
Yeah, I agree with everything with what you said. First of all, Jalen Johnson is a better fantasy player than Randle. Like, point blank. So And yeah, I mean, Johnson, as far as we know, that's relatively short term. And as far as we know, Simons is very short term. So I would, I'd be fairly comfortable dropping Randall. Of course, you become more uncomfortable the longer your league goes, but just how it is.
You got to survive. You got to survive these playoff rounds. And if that's what it means, then, you know, so be it. When is Jalen Johnson back? Well, they said he's out at least a week, and that was on the 21st. So expectation would be that he misses at least two more games. They have a back-to-back Wednesday, Thursday. I would probably guess he misses both of those. Could be back as soon as Saturday against Milwaukee. I just wouldn't count on Jalen Johnson this week. I think if you're, you know, if your league extends into next week, it's a four-gamer for Atlanta, and they have another four-gamer the final week of the regular season, and you're hoping he's back for that.
Yeah, I would say just hope that he's back for early April.
Yeah. All right. Two more here, and then we'll bounce out of here. Isaiah Joe or Aaron Wiggins to stream for this coming Tuesday. This is an ultimate, like, we're at that point of the season question. Only four games on the schedule on Tuesday, so your options are limited. And yeah, we're picking between a couple of Thunder players here, OKC on the road at New Orleans. Oh boy. Do you have a strong thought here, Alex?
Well, if you need threes, go Joe. If you don't need threes, go Wiggins. But to me, it's about as close of a wash as you could get. And I think I would rather have Joe just for the threes upside.
Yeah, I mean, Wiggins seems to have like a slightly higher floor in terms of minutes. Like Joe only played 8 minutes the other night against Milwaukee, but that game also got completely out of hand in the third quarter. I would shoot for the upside with Joe and just hope that he hits like three threes off the bench.
Yeah.
All right, going back to one of the previous questions, Daniel said, my drop was meant to be Beasley, not Monk. So, let's just say you're choosing between Malik Beasley or Malik Monk. You know, Beasley's going to give you more consistent threes only. Monk's going to give you better, much better assist production, better points overall. I would still go with Malik Monk.
I would go Malik Monk by a mile to me. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we'll end on this one. Jabari Walker thoughts. Nice open-ended question on Jabari Walker, who I think you and I both like. You know, it's kind of a matter of like, all right, are the minutes there? His role is changing night to night. You know, he had that run in January and February where he was starting a bunch of games. He's mostly been coming off the bench lately, but still playing a decent amount of minutes. You know, really for Portland, it's just like, all right, is Jeremy Grant out there? One. Is DeAndre Ayton out there? Two. If not, love Jabari Walker. If those guys are in, then obviously his ceiling is a little bit lower. But in general, I'm in. Like if you're in like a deeper, you know, dynasty type of league, I really like Jabari Walker.
Yeah, I think he's a better dynasty target than like this season. But it's really encouraging. Like he's played double digit minutes in 38 straight appearances. Like they're putting him out there. They're playing him all the time. His production really fluctuates, but that's because he's sort of a, I don't want to call him a specialist. He's sort of an odd prospect. But in a good way, like he gets to the free throw line a ton, plays super physical, great offensive rebounder, decent defender. So yeah, he's a little bit undersized at like 6'8", but he's fine. I'm intrigued mostly for Dynasty for this season. On a four game week, it's fine, but there are probably better options if you're in a standard size league also.
Yeah, and they're on a three-gamer this week. They play Houston, Atlanta, Miami. Not a great schedule other than the Atlanta matchup. His 20 highest-minute games this year, he's averaging 11 points, 9 boards, 1.5 assists, 1 block steal. Occasional threes, not really a part of this game right now. But, I mean, Portland's just looking for anything at this point, right? You're just kind of trying to find keepers for that roster when you're actually ready to semi-contend. And I think he's looked the part for the most part. All right, that'll do it. We really just dove in on some of the biggest names in the NBA over the last 45 minutes, Alex. But that's the point of the season that we're at. We appreciate everybody still watching along, listening, firing us good questions. You know, good to see so many regulars in the chat who are still alive in their fantasy playoffs. So we hope we can continue to give you advice. You're still alive this time next week. We'll be back on Monday. We'll have Dr. A tomorrow, myself and Brandon Kravitz on Wednesday, Dr. A and Rick Campbell on Thursday. You guys are you still talking waiver wire every Friday? It's got to be.
We are. I don't remember when our last show is, but we are still doing it.
All right. Excellent. You can check out Alex and I Monday through Friday on the RotoWire NBA show. If you're a SiriusXM listener, SiriusXM NBA 7 to 7:30 PM Eastern, we'll be previewing a monster Monday night slate. We got 11 games coming at us tonight, so check us out over on SiriusXM NBA, 7 to 7:30 p.m. Eastern.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.